store.
You're listening to the True Frequency Radio Network.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
Hello. Welcome again, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. My name's JD. It is the 17th day of March. I think it's St. Patrick's Day. I don't really know. I thought St. Patrick's Day was the 16th. I don't know what's going on. But if it's St. Patrick's Day, then let me be the first to wish you guys a happy St. Patrick's Day. Doesn't mean a lot to me. Just saying. I don't know anything about it. Maybe it should. I don't know. We'll get off that real quick. Anyway, today, 17th day of March. We're live right now. Appreciate all you guys who are already in the chat room. As we are live, you can go to truthfrequencyradio.com, get into the chat room, hang out with some of the other listeners from around the world. It's absolutely awesome, this format, having you guys in there, so that we can just kind of talk back and forth about the news. There's a lot of news going on today, so we'll have a lot to talk about. It's going to be a fairly large show, I'm not going to lie. Linda Moulton Howe is going to be joining us this in the second hour today. And she is going to be breaking a pretty big story. Linda Moulton Howe, for those of you guys who don't know, is probably the world's most renowned investigative journalist when it comes to ufology and things like that. I mean, she's been on Coast to Coast for years. She's got earthfiles.com, an amazing, amazing website. And she was also on a little show on the History Channel called Ancient Aliens that you guys might have heard of. But I'm talking high watermark for ufology researchers, ladies and gentlemen. So she's going to be joining us on the show in about an hour. And we're going to be talking about the very curious case of Mr. John Burroughs. John Burroughs, well, his medical records are classified, and the reason that they're classified is pretty darn important. We're looking at basically a smoking gun in terms of disclosure right now and some of the things that John has done to try and unseal his medical records. This is going to be a big show, ladies and gentlemen. You guys are not going to want to miss the disclosure evidence that Linda is going to be bringing to the program today. John Perkins is going to be joining us tomorrow, obviously the author of Confessions of an Economic Hitman, as well as Hoodwinked, and I think he's written another book as well. We're going to talk quite a bit, I'm sure, about what is happening in Venezuela right now, because I believe that what's going on in Venezuela is probably a very cookie-cutter style approach to the way that the world works. Essentially, behind the scenes, you know, the CIA essentially has outsourced all of its clandestine opportunities to large multinational corporations, and John Perkins was an associate of one of those, went around the world doing all kinds of dubious things and essentially pretty much all the things that we would expect that an economic hitman would do. But definitely am looking forward to that show tomorrow. He's actually one of my all-time heroes just because of that Confessions of an Economic Hitman book. And then Lily Williams is going to be joining us on Thursday, and Andrew Gauze will be here on Friday. I always love talking to Andrew. Lily is going to be an amazing show as well. She is an absolute firecracker when it comes to personal freedom. So, man, I'm telling you what. It's going to be a big, big show today and a big, big week this week. Lots of news and stuff. Obviously, right now, all eyes are on Israel. I don't have any indication as to which way the election is going there right now. Obviously, Benjamin Netanyahu is attempting to regain his seat as prime minister there in Israel today. And I'm not sure how they work in terms of exit polling or anything like that, so I really don't know what to tell you about that right now. I'll definitely keep my eye on Drudge and see if they start giving us kind of indications as to which way that is going. But there is some important news regarding that and some of the statements that he's made recently, so we'll talk about that. I do want to direct everyone's attention to the front page of Red Pill Reports right now. Robert has chosen a very, very, very cool picture of the rings of Saturn. And, you know, I watched a really amazing interview the other day, and I can't remember the guy's name. I think it was Kalami or something like that. But he was talking about the ringmakers of Saturn, which is a subject that I've only recently become, interested in or recently really become aware of. But I'm talking fascinating, fascinating stuff. The idea that these rings around Saturn are actually being created by extraterrestrials that have some sort of intelligence, and perhaps a lot of that dust that we see, all that, all the ring-making material itself, is leftovers from when Planet X came through last. I know it sounds crazy, but, there's a lot of evidence out there. If you can find a copy of that book, Ringmakers of Saturn, there's a lot of pictures of inconsistencies in these rings, and there's also a lot of pictures of what looks like cylindrical vehicles laying down these ginormous grooves. But, man, Robert did put an awesome picture of it up on the homepage today, and it's perfect for our guest, Linda Moulton Howe, today. I'm just very, very impressed with this picture. Appreciate all the effort that the boys do behind the scenes here, making the website look so snazzy. And I really appreciate all you listeners out there sharing the website with your friends and sharing the show with your friends, because it is just freaking awesome. Freaking awesome to be part of this whole team, be part of Truth Frequency. All the other hosts are amazing. Just love you guys. Best listeners in the world, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. I'm going to get away from the homepage right now again. Lots of ways to follow us on social media right at the top of redpillreports.com. Please still do print out the mortgage crisis articles for your friends. Bring people into the loop. I still think that is an issue that we can actually win on. So I definitely want to encourage people again to go to the top of redpillreports.com. Get all the mortgage crisis information. There's a lot of articles. You can figure out how your own mortgage might be compromised. It's a spoiler alert. It probably is. And then when you find out that it is, or you find out that someone that you know is affected by this, you can sign on to this petition and encourage other people to do the same. I'd also highly, highly, highly recommend right now checking out Carrot Bars. Oh my gosh, we talked quite a bit yesterday about the economy and about the great shift that is about ready to take place. I read an amazing article last night, and I should have saved it, and I didn't, because I, suck at my job. But this article is essentially talking about this transition that is going to be taking place in the SDR basket. Now, the SDR, the standard drawing rights basket controlled by the IMF right now, only includes three different currencies. It's the US dollar, the euro, and the British sterling pound, if I'm not mistaken. But China obviously has been promoting their currency like crazy people around the world. And we do have a little bit of economic news regarding that. But it does look like with the transition to not only including alternative currencies in the SDR basket, but using gold itself as an anchor in the SDR basket, I think the price of gold is going to skyrocket here, and I don't think it's going to take very long. I really think with the change that's getting ready to happen on the 20th, right now would probably be a really good time to buy as much gold as you possibly could. And I'm just saying that because the dollar index is high, the gold price is low, and if they do some kind of drastic shift where, we know that they're going to stop the London fix. The London fix is over on the 20th. And how the new fix is going to, assign a value to gold, we kind of don't know yet. But if China has something to do with it and they're looking at using gold to back the renminbi, it's going to change the value of gold. It's going to change the value of gold significantly. And to me, carat bars is the way to go because you don't have to buy a whole lot. You can buy a gram or two at a time. You can set it up on a weekly thing, and they've got a brand new website. It's absolutely amazing. I've been affiliated with them for about 6 months and would never, ever, ever do anything like this. But I'm very, very glad that I did, and I'm stupidly happy to recommend it to other people. And if you guys have questions about it, please email me. But again, there's a link to Carat Bars right at the top of our page, and I would seriously go check out the website because it's beautiful. Brand new website. Just came out a couple of weeks ago. Good stuff. Okay, moving on. Let's get into some news. There's ISIS is in the news again, and I want to kind of preface this by just saying this is coming out of CBS News from Washington, D.C. So here we are on the American side of the coin. And this is what's coming out about ISIS right now. En route to conquering the European cities of Paris and Rome, because ISIS, of course, has been having the cities of Paris and Rome in their sights here for a while now. The Islamic State of Iraq and Syria say now that they plan to blow up the White House and Big Ben and the Eiffel Tower. So ISIS spokesman Abu Mohammed al-Andani detailed the terror group's plan to conquer Portugal, Spain, Paris, and Rome in an almost 30-minute audio message to the West. So they kill and are killed, which references a Quran voice. That was the Quran verse, excuse me. That was the title of this 30-minute audio message, so they kill and are killed. He goes on to say, we won the day in Europe, and the U.S. dreamt of reclaiming Tal-Hamus, Mosul, Sinjar, Tikrit, Qayyam, Derna, and Tel Abyad, and more. According to the ISIS mouthpiece, he said, we, with the help of Allah, want Paris before Rome and Islamic Iberia, and after we blow up the White House, Big Ben, and the Eiffel Tower before Paris and Rome, the Muslims will return to power to be a vanguard and lead in every place. I think they're a little bit full of themselves here, personally, but just saying. So again, the Islamic State's Al-Andani gave Jews and Christians the ultimatum that they could either convert to Islam or pay the ultimate price when your armies are expelled from Muhammad's peninsula, from Jerusalem, and all Muslim lands. This is a translation from Yinet News. He warned Christians and Jews that they would soon be unable to stop the jihadi advance of the caliphate, saying that the Jews and the Crusaders are scared and weak. Okay. The Middle East Media Research Institute noted that the spokesman message is an attempt to boost morale among Islamic State militants following recent attacks against them by the American-led coalition forces and rebel force fighters. The ISIS spokesman reiterates that the extremist group will ultimately prevail and its destructive plan despite its recent losses. Recent losses coming to mind such as the city of Tikrit in Iraq. And so that was, again, the American side. This is ISIS saying we're going to blow up the White House and the Eiffel Tower and Big Ben. And oh, we are so scary. And oh, we are so well funded. But meanwhile, in a report coming out of Iraq from the International Business Tribune, Islamic State fighters have been caught fleeing the battlefield dressed as women. This is a true story. In an attempt to flee northern Iraq, because, again, Tikrit just fell, and these people in Mosul are starting to think, man, we're going to get our behinds handed to us here. And so, again, a series of pictures have now emerged showing men wearing dresses and makeup in a bid to leave behind their lives as ISIS fighters. The first photographs emerged on Instagram this week and showed authorities pulling back the veils and burqas worn by young boys and men with mustaches. So captions in Arabic accompanying the pictures indicated that the pictures were taken in the Iraq's northern Baji area. And Iraqi forces have fought a nonstop battle of attrition around an oil refinery supported by American airstrikes. Iraqi Defense Minister Khalid al-Abidi said the battle to recapture the key city of Tikrit could have been a decisive turning point in the war, and as apparently seemed to be the case. ISIS militants are defending the area with roadside bombs and frequent suicide attacks. However, over 20,000 Iraqi troops continue to make gains. So you can go to redpillreports.com and check out the show section, which you will also be able to find out quite a bit about Linda Moulton Howe and some of her recent work. But you'll also be able to find this article, Islamic State fighters caught fleeing battlefield dressed as women. So how tough are they really in Iraq? I don't know. I wanted to point out also, this is a breaking story that came out yesterday, but again, coming from the times of Israel. So remember what's going on in Israel right now. Remember the fact that the relationship between Israel and the United States is pretty sour at this point. But again, according to a report in the Times of Israel, James Clapper, the U.S. Director of National Intelligence Agency, delivered a report to Congress that scraps Iran and Hezbollah from the terrorism list, citing now the country's work against ISIS as one of the reasons why. So again, the NIA, National Intelligence Agency's head, John Clapper, has now removed Iran and Hezbollah from the terrorist list here in our country. According to Press TV, the unclassified version of the report, titled Worldwide Threat Assessments of the U.S. Intelligence Communities, which was released on February 26 of 2015, noted Iran's effort to battle extremists, including those of the ISIL terrorist group, who were perceived to constitute the greatest terrorist threat to American interests worldwide. Highlighting Iran's regional role, the report pointed to the Islamic Republic's intentions to dampen sectarianism, build responsive partners, and de-escalate tensions with Saudi Arabia. He goes on to say, Iran has overarching strategic goals of enhancing its security prestige and regional influence that have led to led it to pursue capabilities to meet its civilian goals. The report also says that Hezbollah is countering ISIL Takfiri terrorists in Syria and Iraq. Finally, it comes out again in print. I had mentioned this last week when we were talking about the Battle of Tikrit, the fact that they went after Tikrit without using U.S. air support, without using a big, ginormous juggernaut of U.S. coalition. It was essentially 20 to 30,000 Iranian and Iraqi militia members who basically went in and destroyed ISIL into Crete. But at the same time, there were some reports coming out saying that Lebanon had actually sent members of Hezbollah to help as well. So how is it, you know, how stupid does Netanyahu look sitting around basically saying this is Iran trying to take over the region? Meanwhile, Iran working hand in hand with Iraq. And apparently now, you know, this is another report where it's been disclosed here that also working with Hezbollah. And because of all that, now Hezbollah and Iran both have been taken off of the terrorist list here in the United States. Are we going to see the sanctions in Iran dropped soon would be my next question. And, of course, you have to wonder how much influence Valerie Jarrett has in Barack Obama's ear right now. Remember, she's a senior advisor to him and an Iranian national. Also wanted to just point out, while we're on the subject of Hezbollah being taken off of the terror list, according to the Jerusalem Post, Hezbollah will now send 800 more men to fight alongside Iraqi forces against the Islamic State for control of Mosul. So again, this battle for Mosul is getting ready to go down here, ladies and gentlemen. And according to sources, following the battle over Tikrit, Tehran turned to Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah with a joint Iraqi-Iranian request to support the fight against the Islamic State in Mosul with trained fighters. And an unnamed source told Al Jadid that Nasrallah agreed to send about 800 men from the elite units to participate in the anticipated battle. The source cited the similarity between the topography of southern Lebanon and the mountain terrain of Mosul as an advantage to the integration of Hezbollah fighters an integration of Hezbollah forces into the fighting, saying that Lebanese men are already familiar and experienced fighters in both open areas and in narrow streets. The Hezbollah fighters will enter Iraq equipped with light gear and arms, and once there, Iran will equip the men with heavy weapons. The source told Al Jadid that unless there are any deployments on the Israeli-Lebanon border, the fighters will deploy within 2 or 3 weeks, and the men are expected to be stationed in the northern city of Samarra, where they will work to draft plans for the attack on Mosul. Iran has already began operating an operation center in Samarra led by Qasem Soleimani, who is the commander of Iraq's Quds Force. Now, Soleimani is the guy that Standeo thinks we all should keep a very close eye on, because, again, some of the Book of Revelation talks about Solomon being the name or the mark of the beast, and Soleimani is kind of a corollary to that name. He's also a very good tactician in terms of strategy and military, which is something that Standeo believes indicates that he might potentially be the force that everyone kind of joins behind there in the Muslim world, aka the Antichrist. Not saying I believe that, just pointing that out, that his name is coming up more and more often in the news, and it wouldn't turn out to surprise me if Standeo ended up being correct, ladies and gentlemen. Just saying that. Okay, moving away from all of the Hezbollah nonsense and what have you. Thousands of Russian troops were put on alert Monday morning after President Putin ordered a surprise large-scale military drill to test the armed forces' readiness to counter challenges in the country's north and particularly in the Arctic. The order to go into battle readiness mode was given to the Northern Fleet, paratroopers, and units of the Western Military District at 8 a.m. Moscow time by the commander-in-chief. Some 38,000 troops, 41 ships, 15 submarines, 110 jets, and choppers taking part in the drills, which focus on boosting Russia's military presence in the Arctic and to test how quickly special operations forces can be moved along large distances. These new military challenges and threats demand further boost of the military capabilities of armed forces, and special attention is being paid to the conditions of a newly set up strategic command in the north, according to Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu. He told the media this on Monday. A month earlier, Shoigu warned that Russia could consider protecting its natural interests in the Arctic with military means if necessary. Now, during these current tests in the Arctic, the Navy will test sinking imaginary battleships during the games. There will also be the first time the Arctic Motorized Rifle Brigade stationed in the Murmansk region will be put to the test, and the drills will continue until the 21st of March. Military drills of varying complexity have also been launched all across the country. The Russian military base in Kyrgyzstan, Kant, is also taking part. Troops stationed there are testing their ability to locate an adversary in difficult climatic and geographical conditions. The Russian drills have been announced amid increased NATO activity near Russian borders, a cause of permanent dissatisfaction in the Kremlin. And on Monday, the Russian Foreign Ministry expressed deep concerns about the NATO drills taking place in the northeastern part of Europe. Deputy head Alexei Meshkov has warned that such actions coming from the alliance can only lead to the destabilization of the situation and stokes up tension. A week ago, more than 120 armored units, including tanks, were deployed in Latvia. So are we getting ready to go to war in the Ukraine with Russia? Yes, I think that's probably a given at this point. Hopefully, the rest of the world will take notice and step up and start removing some of these idiots from power. But I don't know what's going to happen. But anyway, doesn't look good. Doesn't look good right now. Benjamin Netanyahu, obviously the election's obviously going on right now. I haven't seen any election polls yet in terms of exits, so I don't really know what's going on. But I just wanted to point out, he did say as long as he remains Israel's prime minister, he will not allow the creation of a Palestinian state. So the words came a day after the parliamentary election in which the polls predict victory to rivals of Netanyahu's Likud party. So again, they're kind of playing this back and forth. Oh, it's going to be such a tight race. I cannot imagine that these guys don't use Diebold machines over there. And there's no way that if it's a close race, then Netanyahu's going to lose. I'm just putting that out there right now. Anyway, in his interview with NRG News website, Prime Minister was asked whether no Palestinian state would emerge if he remains Israel's leader. He replied, indeed. So this answer actually contradicts his previous statement on the issue, as the prime minister backed the creation of a demilitarized Palestine state as part of a permanent peace deal in his famous Bar Ilan speech shortly after being elected. Now, his main competitors right now in the vote today is the Zionist Union. It's funny to me. I mean, is this a problem reaction solution here? Netanyahu is just so bad we've got to elect the Zionists. I mean, they actually call themselves Zionists, and people are like, I don't think they're Zionists, blah, 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 blah. Their name of their political organization is the Zionist Union. That's a pretty good indicator of what their belief structure is about. Anyway, that Zionist Union led by Isaac Herzog and Zippy Levine have initially agreed to run the government for 2 years each should they win, but now the Zionist Union announced on Monday that Livni has agreed to give up on the power-sharing deal to increase the party's chances against Likud. According to Haaretz, she told Herzog that the rotation will not become a hurdle in the coalition talks and said that the most important thing is removing Netanyahu from office. So that's what's going on there right now. Again, I'll have to hop over to Drudge during the break. And, of course, if you guys are in the chat room and have any indications on anything that's going on, breaking news in terms of that election, do squirrel it into the chat room because I would certainly like to see it. Oh, this is a goofy story coming from Britain right now. Britain is likely to pass a tougher tobacco control bill on Monday that would bar cigarette makers from using their own logos on products, instead requiring all manufacturers to use a uniform design. The proposed legislation aims to ensure that the package design of tobacco products highlights the images and words that emphasize the health hazards of smoking, therefore reducing the number of smokers. However, the proposal has been met with pretty fierce antagonism from the British tobacco industry, which decries it as a violation of the right of freedom of expression. And tobacco makers have threatened to bring a lawsuit against the government, insisting that the act can be repealed. However, the Australian government actually enacted the first such measure in the world back in December of 2012. Tobacco makers did sue. They did not win. So this law did go through in Australia earlier this year. Ireland passed a similar law. And in Britain, the bill passed the House of Commons on Wednesday. It's likely that the House of Lords will pass the bill, or did pass the bill yesterday. I haven't seen an update on that yet. But if the outcome is successful, the law will be enacted in May of 2016, and all of your cigarette packets will turn brown. Does anybody care? Probably not. But I just thought it was interesting giving you guys a little heads up over in the UK. Also want to point out, too, again, we're going to have a major eclipse, going to be plunging the UK and other places into darkness this Friday. You got 2 days to prepare. It is two other rare, if less spectacular, celestial events will be taking place all at the same time. We have the supermoon and the spring equinox. So we have the eclipse, the supermoon, and the spring equinox all happening on the same day. So supermoon, or the perigee moon, happens when the full moon or new moon does its closest flyby of the Earth, which makes it look bigger than it normally does. And then the spring equinox refers to the time of the year when the day and night are of equal duration, midway through the longest and the shortest days. So the solar eclipse is, of course, the phenomenon where the sun and the moon line up so that the latter obscures the former. And while it won't be affected by the other two events, it is rare that the three events all happen at the same time. Most of the time, there are between 3 and 6 supermoons a year. There is set to be 6 in 2015 alone, two of which have already happened. The next will take place on the 20th day of March here this upcoming Friday, the same day as the eclipse, and the others will come in August, September, and October. Anyway, the equinox will also happen on March 20th, and while it won't have any discernible direct impact on how the solar eclipse lurks, it will contribute to a rare collision of three unusual celestial events. Also pointing out that this that this supermoon slash what do you want to call it, solar eclipse is happening on the exact middle of all of the blood moons that are going on right now too. And you know, a lot of people think that there are signs written in the skies, and that full moon slash supermoon slash eclipse happening on the first day, I think that's the first day of the Jewish calendar, if I'm not mistaken, which I don't think, the four blood moon thing is kind of weird. So we got the four blood moons going on this year that all line up with very specific Jewish holidays. That's only actually happened seven times since the crucifixion of Christ. But I'm not sure, somebody do some research for me here, but I think that this, this big blood moon solar eclipse happening on the first day of the Jewish calendar, I think that's the only time that's ever happened ever. In the history of, you know, ever. So probably a fairly significant event to somebody out there. It's always important not only to understand what it is that you and I believe, but it's always important to understand what the large masses of people out there might believe, because you just, that's, you know, that's, you never know which way they're going to go, and you got to be prepared. So just paying attention to this kind of thing, I think, is very important. So anyway, we're just about out of time. We've got a lot of national news to get to, a lot of economic news to get to, and some science and health stuff. So I'll try and wrap it up here. Go to this quick 3-minute break. You guys hang tight in the chat room. Appreciate y'all being in there. And, we'll come back. I have lots more news. And then, Linda Moulton Howe will be joining us in about a half an hour. It's going to be a great, great conversation. Can't appreciate you guys enough for being here. We'll be right back, guys. 3-minute break.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. Wouldn't it it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
The Chris Everard Show.
Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. Thank all of you guys in the chat room as well. Very nice to see all of you this morning. Let's hop into some national news here real quick. Get over into the old good U.S. of A. On Monday this week, the United States reached its legal debt limit of $18 trillion, which is obviously more than the country's entire GDP. And so lawmakers will either have to lift it or attempt to cap spending now. So as of March 12th, the U.S. Treasury reported a federal debt at 18 and a whole lot of zeros after it in its daily Treasury statement. Okay, this figure is above the statutory debt limit, which was extended by Congress through March 15th of this year. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew told Congress that the limit would be reached on March 16th, and they also requested lawmakers raise the debt ceiling as soon as possible in a letter written in early March. Under the current arrangements, the U.S. government can keep running until October using so-called extraordinary measures or accounting tricks to keep money flowing into government programs, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Now that a new zenith has been passed, a fresh showdown between lawmakers and the president about America's spending habits can now be expected. The U.S. raised the debt ceiling to $17.2 trillion in February of 2014, keeping the economy a safe distance from the so-called fiscal cliff. Before striking a deal, though, Republicans shut down the government in October of 2014, put many federal employees out of work for a couple of weeks, and cost the economy an estimated $24 billion. The U.S. government is again left with the decision to raise its debt ceiling, the maximum amount of money it can borrow. If it isn't raised, the country, in theory, could default. The debt ceiling, which has been around since 1917, has been raised over 100 times to accommodate the world's largest economy's ballooning budget. And the Republicans and Democrats have long been viciously divided over how to fund the budget and which programs the government can afford to fund. So, again, we've blown through that $18 trillion debt limit. We have extraordinary provisions in place so we can operate through October, but I don't know. Maybe we should try and tackle this now as opposed to waiting a whole long time. Just saying. This is a goofy story, too. This came out. You guys heard of wealthy real estate heir Robert Durst? He is an eccentric U.S. tycoon linked now to the two killings and has been arrested in connection with a third murder just a day after airing a television documentary in which he says that he killed them all, and that's a direct quote. Robert Durst, who is a scion of wealthy New York real estate family, he was taken into custody on Saturday at a New Orleans hospital at the request of, at a New Orleans hotel at the request of Los Angeles police investigating the 2000 killing of his friend Susan Berman, and was being held on a murder warrant, according to U.S. media. The arrest came just one day before the HBO television network broadcast the final in a 6-part documentary series about Durst called The Jinx, The Life and Deaths of Robert Durst. In that final episode, Durst, who is 71, is heard muttering to himself, "What the hell did I do? Killed them all, of course." Apparently unaware that a wireless microphone, remained switched on while he was using the bathroom. It was this sensational development in Durst's case which has been widely followed in the United States. Durst was wanted over the 2000 unsolved killing of Berman, who was a daughter of a Las Vegas mobster who was shot dead execution style in the back of the head in Los Angeles a day before police were to question her over the disappearance of Durst's wife. Durst had long been under suspicion over his wife's death in 1982, but has denied any involvement. The wealthy real estate mogul was also charged in 2003 with the murder and dismemberment of his 71-year-old neighbor in Texas 2 years earlier, but was found not guilty after a trial in which he claimed self-defense. At what point does dismemberment come into the picture in self-defense? I just wanted to ask that question. But anyway, the Los Angeles Times said authorities did not comment on what led them to accuse Durst now, but a source to the newspaper told them that the documentary had played a role. FBI agents believe Durst may have been planning to flee the United States because he registered under an alias at the hotel where he was arrested, paid with cash, and was found with fake documents, according to a source to ABC News. Durst has reportedly denied killing Berman, and Durst's attorney, Chip Lewis, told the Washington Post that he has maintained his innocence for 10 years now and nothing has changed. The Post said it is not clear whether Lewis knew about Durst's recorded remarks in the bathroom or whether or not this would be admissible in court. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is Mr. Durst going down. So as far as I'm concerned, that's one Durst down, one more Durst to go. Fred, looking in your general direction, buddy. Days are numbered. Okay, anyway, moving on. West Virginia. Good news coming out of West Virginia. Last week, two gun rights bills prevailed in the West Virginia legislature. They are now on their way to Governor Tomlin's desk. State Bill 347, which is a constitutional carry bill, would legalize the concealed carry of a handgun without a permit for any individuals in the state age 21 and up who are legally allowed to own firearms. It passed the West Virginia House by a margin of 79-21 and was supported by the Senate for 32 against two in their vote. So the West Virginia legislature also voted nearly unanimously in favor of another bill, State Bill 284, which would require the local chief law enforcement officer to sign off on the purchases of Title II items, such as fully automatic weapons and noise suppressors, which are now restricted under the National Firearms Act for anybody who has passed a background check. So according to Guns.com, this dispute over the Title II items stems from the fact that the law currently allows local chief law enforcement officers to deny transfers of ownership of Title II weapons and accessories between individuals who have passed a background check for arbitrary or personal political reasons. So State Bill 284 would require these CLEOs to approve the transfers. American Suppressor Association President Knox Williams pointed out when the National Firearms Act of 1934 was signed into law, computerized background checks did not exist. So at that time, the CLEO sign-off was really the only means by which individuals applying for a transfer of an NFA item could be actually vetted. Since 1934, technology has come full circle, but now the antiquated CLEO sign-off requirement has still remained. So SB 284 would allow the background check to work as intended. So it's not necessarily that they're saying they want the requirement of the local chief enforcement officer to sign off. They're saying that that requirement actually exists now and is a hindrance to the transfer of these Title II type weapons and accessories. And so they're basically going to nip that problem in the butt by saying if you guys pass your background checks, the CLEO is obligated to sign off, basically taking it from a may issue state to a shall issue state, which is a big difference. Anyway, SB 347, on the other hand, simply allows law-abiding gun owners to carry a pistol or a revolver in a concealed fashion for self-defense without obtaining a permit. Individuals will be permitted to carry in such a fashion in public and while traveling in automobiles. Of course, the bill prohibits gun owners from carrying at public schools, the West Virginia Capitol, and courthouses within the state. The State Journal also notes that the bill originally extended constitutional carry to any lawful gun over 18, but the amendment tweaked the minimum age to 21 with an exception for individuals between 18 and 21 who serve in the military. I don't necessarily agree with that last portion. I think it should be 18 if you're old enough to smoke, if you're old enough to go and serve. You should be, whether or not you're actively serving or not, you should still be able to take a test to show that you're, you know, have some gun safety. I'm also not sure about that whole we're just going to let them, everybody, without I'm not saying I want permits. I'm totally for, you know, absolutely, we all should be able to carry weapons. But I think it would be still smart to either instill in the education program in our schools some sort of gun safety, you know, measures. We should make sure that the safety aspect is super high also, and that people who are, you know, going to be carrying are going to be safe while they're doing it. But anyway, super big news out of West Virginia, and that's pretty awesome. The Texas Senate also is expected to bring a pro-gun open carry bill to the floor for a vote as early as next week. The move comes after the 60-day bill filing period ended on Friday, and the Texas legislature may now vote on and pass any bills. But before the first 60 days is passed, the legislature may only approve bills on issues designated as emergency items by the governor. But one bill being considered for early passage is an open carry bill written by State Senator Craig Estes, who is a Republican from Wichita Falls. The bill, State Bill 17, which passed a committee vote earlier in the session, would allow for the open carry of firearms by people who already have concealed handgun licenses. I didn't realize that Texas was not an open carry state. That seems kind of unusual that they're not, but I guess that's a good thing. I'm not a huge proponent of open carry. I think open carry is awesome if you're in a large group of people, but if you're in a situation where you already have a concealed weapons permit, why would you open carry and make yourself a target? I would, you know, the whole concept of the concealed carry program is so that criminals don't know whether you have a gun. That means they have to think about it, you know, and think, okay, statistically, is it likely that this person's going to shoot me? I don't know. I'm going to go home and eat a bowl of cornflakes instead of freaking going out and trying to rob people. But if you have a gun and it's on your hip, and I'm a guy with six friends and I see your gun and know that it's valuable, you know, you're a target. You're a target. And so I don't know. I don't want to limit anybody's rights, but I would rather people were safe in terms of carrying their stuff around. I want to point out also, a Los Angeles-based police officer has been arrested and now could face human smuggling charges after officials at the U.S.-Mexico border discovered someone hiding in the officer's car. Border Patrol agents stopped the officer for questioning on Saturday night and later saw the person hiding. The officer was taken into custody by California U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials. The officer was assigned to Los Angeles's Police Department Hollywood Division, and his name has not been released. So I would imagine that will be the last you ever hear of that story. But there you go. Let's move on. There's a few more stories from the national news. I'm going to skip those real quick because I want to get over and check out what is going on in the markets right now for all of you kids. The Dow currently down 183 points right now, or 1%, 17,791, so 17,791 on the Dow. S&P following suit, also down about 0.5% today, but still well above the 2,000 mark there. U.S. dollar index has fallen away from the 100 mark. We're at 99.93 right now, and I imagine the euro is probably climbing up just a touch as well. Just a touch would be about as generous as I could be there. We're still at 105.63, up nearly a, you know, tenth of a percentage point. Oh, wait, nope, something just updated. Now we're at 1.0604, up 0.75%. That was what I was waiting for, a little bit of update. Bitcoin also 284.14, so Bitcoin seems like it's doing pretty well right now. Gold flat at 1150, down about 0.25% today. Silver following suit also $15.58. We'll get you an ounce of silver. And crude oil dropping again today, another almost 2.5%. We're sitting at $45 and 7 big pennies for a barrel of crude. Truth is telling me the BDI is up 568, up by 4 on March 17th. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate you guys being here every day. That's your job now there, Truth. Okay. Big news coming out. You know, we've been talking about the yuan, the renminbi, quite a bit lately. And I don't think people are getting the message that the dollar is going away. Guys, this is happening right now. There was a big poll that came out yesterday. I totally mentioned. I read an article earlier today talking about the expansion of the SDR basket. I read this yesterday. The expansion of the SDR basket. Now, China has been lobbying, going around the world, you know, basically saying our currency is going to be the next global currency. We want it included in the SDR basket. Well, the SDR basket usually is examined once a year, apparently, by the IMF. And they usually don't do any kind of basket adjustment until the first of the year. That's been typically how it's gone. But the indications that I'm getting now, and this again, it's got to raise the hair on the back of your neck a little bit. The indication right now is that they are potentially going to make an adjustment in October of this year. So 3 months early, first of all. And what's that adjustment going to be? It's going to be adding the yuan. It's probably going to be adding a number of other currencies to the SDR basket, as well as some resources just in terms of gold, to bolster the value of the SDR, kind of level the playing field a little bit. So October struck me when I read that. I thought, man, what in the world could possibly happen, say around, I don't know, September, that might lead the IMF to make some kind of knee-jerk reaction? We've got to fix this problem right now. We got to straighten out the SDR. What in the world might be going down in September? Coincidentally, the same time the Pope is coming to speak to Congress for the first time. Just saying, a lot of stuff looking like things are happening in September. A lot of things going on around the world. Anyway, the Chinese yuan has done overtake the U.S. dollar as the leading international reserve currency, according to a new poll of institutional investors. Okay, the authors of this survey, conducted by the Economist Intelligence Unit and commissioned by State Street Financials, they polled 200 senior executives at institutional investment houses with knowledge of their exposure to the yuan assets, right? Half of these respondents were from firms headquarters in mainland China, including Hong Kong and Taiwan, and the other half were based elsewhere. The report accompanying the survey points out that by the end of 2013, the yuan had risen to become the second most used trade financing currency and the ninth most used currency for payments globally. The majority, 53% of the respondents, said they do believe the yuan will one day surpass the dollar as the top currency in international holdings of foreign exchange reserves. In China, 62% expressed this opinion, compared to 43% of respondents based outside of the country. Last May, the International Monetary Fund analysis showed that the dollar had slumped to a 15-year low, heightening concerns that it may lose status as the global reserve. Chinese officials are diligently working on sustaining their national currency, promoting it beyond the frontier. In October of 2013, the government of China agreed to a pilot program to create a UK-based yuan hub that allows London investors to buy up to 13.1 billion of stocks and bonds and money market instruments directly, which allowed them to avoid Hong Kong trading transactions, right? That move gave the yuan a firmer footprint in Europe and helped to overcome the euro in December, becoming now the second most widely used global currency in trade. Only 11% of the respondents said that they did not expect the yuan to become a major reserve currency, a split between 16 outside of China and 6 onshore, according to the poll. Among the former, the most often cited reasons are that the yuan will never enjoy enough liquidity across all asset classes to offer a viable option as a reserve currency, and that people will not trust the yuan as a store of value. I guarantee you, if you add gold to the backing of the yuan, people will trust its value big time. The very few pessimists from the China-headquartered institutions, meanwhile, say that people would be very concerned about future policies of the Chinese government and opposition from other economic powers such as the U.S., the EU, and Japan. But the consensus is that one day it will be a one world. So all this time, ladies and gentlemen, we've been worried about a one world currency. Apparently we're going to have a one yuan currency. And we missed it by just a couple vowels. So there you go. That's what's happening. Again, as China economic influence continues to grow, the global importance of the renminbi will become magnified. Indeed, while for decades it has been the greenback world, dominated by the U.S. dollar as the world's primary reserve currency, many think a redback world in which the renminbi enjoys premier status is increasingly possible, and the survey authors all concluded that very same thing. So there you go, moving again towards away from the dollar, towards the renminbi, towards gold-backed currencies. What's going to happen that they would have to suddenly add the yuan to the SDR basket in October? I think it's something's going to happen here. Anyway, Crimean authorities now have signed the first two major contracts with investors since the accession to Russia. The contract deals with energy are now valued at $30 million, according to the head of the republic, Sergei Aksionov. He says, we have signed the first two investment projects worth about $30 million in all the energy field. And at the same time, we have about 200 applications that are now being considered. The comments come as Russia is preparing to celebrate the anniversary of the reunification with Crimea on the 17th of March. President Vladimir Putin, on 17 March 2014, President Vladimir Putin signed the decree allowing the region to enter the Russian Federation after the vast majority of Crimean citizens voted in favor of the referendum. The government of Crimea has made officials personally responsible for refusing investment, and the order is to prevent any unjustified refusal by unscrupulous officials. So again, Crimea is now open for business, and moving on things with Russia, which is, I guess, par for the course, what we would expect. Oil production in the United States has not eased at all despite low prices, and America's major storage facilities are running out of room. This is according to the former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan. He said this on Bloomberg TV yesterday. Greenspan expected supply to ease, but noted that the data shows domestic crude production continued to rise. He says, if you look at the data, our major domestic facility for storing is in Cushing, Oklahoma, which is a delivery point for the West Texas Intermediate crude contracts. We are probably at the point now where the current rate of oil we are going to run out of room in Cushing by next month. The question then is, where does the crude go? Everyone's forecast was prices collapse and a sharp curtailment of shale oil production, but that has not happened. The weekly figures produced by the Energy Administration through March 6 showed a continued rise in domestic crude production, and it's got no place to go because we can't legally export it the way we could with most products. Essentially, we are bottling up a huge amount of crude in the United States, so if the West Texas Intermediate is running at $10 a barrel under Brent crude, which is the global price, that means we are creating great abnormalities in the system, and unless we find a way to get out of this dilemma, prices will continue to ease because there is no place for that oil to go. Greenspan also said that the large price difference between the WTI and Brent will result in volatile spot prices for oil going forward. So running out of room, still producing, can't seem to figure out what we're going to do with it all. You know what bothers me again, we're seeing the price of oil come down. It's been down 60% in the last 6 months, and it hasn't translated into lower food prices. And that really bothers me because it means that all the other stuff is a scam. This is just some kind of big scam going on, because if they can ship food for half of what they used to be able to ship it for, there's no reason any of us should be paying $4 for a loaf of bread at this point. You know, that doesn't make any sense to me. They've had plenty of time to adjust their prices, and I don't want to hear that they're keeping them high just in case the price of oil goes back up, which it clearly is not going to do, because everybody is producing oil. You know, nobody, even OPEC, has said that they're not intending to cut down until midsummer. So will the price go up in May when the busy driving season comes? I don't think so. I don't think that's going to happen at all. Let's see, here's another interesting story. Giant financial institutions that benefited from federal bailouts during the depths of the recession have repaid the American people's largesse by hiding profits overseas to avoid paying their fair share of taxes. According to a new report commissioned by Senator Bernie Sanders, who is from Vermont, four big banks, Citibank, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, and JP Morgan Chase, which received massive amounts of money and loan guarantees to keep them afloat in the wake of the financial crisis, parked large amounts of money in tax haven nations. Luxembourg, looking in your general direction here. Citigroup got the most help of the four in the bailout. They received $2.5 trillion. That company has at least 427 offshore divisions where it squirrels away profits out of reach of the American people. And those funds, as of 2014, totaled $43.8 billion, which would mean $11.7 billion in tax revenue to the United States if they were to be brought to this country. And Citigroup CEO Michael Corbat was rewarded $1.5 million in salary, $4.5 million in bonuses, and $8 million in stock for his work in 2014. Bank of America received $1.3 trillion bailout from the American people, and in 2014 it had $17 billion in profits stashed overseas, which would bring, again, about $4.3 billion in funding for education, infrastructure, and other badly needed projects to the United States, would it be brought back here. Bank of America CEO Brian Moynihan made $1.5 million in salary, $13 million in bonuses, and $11.5 million in stocks in 2014. JP Morgan Chase got $416 billion bailout for the American taxpayers. That bank has hidden $28.5 billion overseas, which would bring $6.4 billion to the U.S. Treasury. Chase CEO Jamie Dimon was paid $1.5 million in salary, $7.4 million in bonuses, and $11.1 million in company stocks in 2014. Goldman Sachs was the recipient of $814 billion in virtually zero interest loans, as well as $10 billion from the government. It's holding $22.5 billion offshore. That would obviously bring $4.1 billion back to the American people, but CEO of Goldman Sachs, Lloyd Blankfein, he made $2 million in salary, $7.33 million in bonuses, and $7.33 million in stock also in 2014. Of course, these banks aren't the only companies taking advantage of tax havens. Apple, for example, famously worked out, so two of its subsidiaries have no home country at all to which to pay taxes. But then again, Apple didn't come hat in hand begging the American people not to let it go under. So again, we bailed these banks out. They basically put all that money over into Luxembourg and through banks like UBS and HSBC. And we really wouldn't have found out about any of this stuff if it hadn't been for all the recent disclosures that have come out, all the investigations going into what's going on in terms of, you know, all this goofy stuff. And I'll tell you what, Greg Morse is on the cusp of breaking all this stuff as well. These are all the same people, all the same players involved with everything that's going on. Okay, what else should we talk about here? Oh, U.S. manufacturing took a really another big dive yesterday. The February factory output fell another 0.2%, which missed expectations for a third month in a row. Again, third drop in a row for factory output, which is the worst run since 2009. Overall, industrial production missed for the third month in a row, but managed a meager 0.1% rise on the back of the biggest rise in utility output ever. Auto vehicles and parts production tumbled 3% month over month. That's a huge, huge, huge decline there in terms of what we're actually producing in this country. So let's move away from that stuff here real quick and see if we can check out. Oh, I don't know if I have time for this. Man, there's an awesome article in Popular Science today about the dark net. If you guys have any curiosity about the dark net, that would be good checking out. I do want to mention also, we've talked about this particular smartphone app called Sidekick a few times. It's on Indiegogo right now. They are looking for, I love you guys in the chat room. You guys make me laugh. They're looking for funding right now. Sidekick is this app that allows you to have real-time legal representation while you're being stopped by a police officer. It searches a network of lawyers and will live stream video and audio from your encounter directly to a lawyer. They have received enough money to move on to the second phase of their fundraising, and I really like this app. I really hope you guys support it. Just go kick them a dollar. You know, every dollar helps. This is going to be an app that's going to help a lot of people out there. Again, it's called Sidekick, and you can find it at Indiegogo. But anyway, we got to go to a 3-minute break, and we come back. Linda Moulton Howe will be joining us, and we're going to have a very, very incredible discussion. So strap in, guys. This is time for the seatbelts, and get your pad and paper ready too, because you will not want to miss any of this. We'll be right back, guys. 3-minute break. Keep it right here.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
You are now tuned into the Truth Frequency.
We are TFR. TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We are moving into what I anticipate to be a very exciting hour here at Red Pill Reports. I'm very excited to be welcoming back to the program Linda Moulton Howell. For those of you guys who don't know, you can go to redpillreports.com and check out the show section to be able to find out everything you could possibly want to know about her, which is extensive. I got to tell you, I've got to truncate her biography here by a lot because it would take the entire hour. She's a very, very impressive young lady, I have to tell you. But so for those of you guys who don't know, she's a graduate of Stanford University. She has a master's degree in communication. She devoted her documentary film, television, radio, and writing and reporting career to productions concerning science, medicine, and the environment. Ms. Howe has received local, national, and international awards, including 3 regional Emmys, a national Emmy nomination, and a WCVB Boston Station Peabody Award for medical and science programming. She also produces, reports, and edits the award-winning science, environment, and earth mystery news website, earthfiles.com, which has been honored with a web award for News Standard of Excellence. Her monthly 3-hour radio news reports about science, environment, and earth mysteries are all broadcast on the Premier Radio Network's Coast to Coast AM throughout the United States. I'm sure many of you have heard her from there. She's also written 4 different books, and she's also was in a little show you guys might have heard of called Ancient Aliens on the History Channel. But to be honest, she's done extensive travel. She is probably one of the most world-renowned investigative researchers in the fields of ufology and all of the ancillary issues. She's discovered more unusual and fascinating things than anybody I've ever spoken with in my life. Linda, it is with absolute sincere humbleness that I welcome you back to the program and thank you for taking time out of your schedule to join us today.
Well, thank you and congratulations on Red Pill Radio, trying to focus on some of the more important headlines and in-depth information that is happening around us that is definitely not being covered on the 6 o'clock news, even though it should. And when I think about what I have been trying to report about at earthfiles.com starting back in February 22nd, there was a very important press release that was put out by an attorney from Jackson, Mississippi named Pat Frasconia, who has been working with retired U.S. Air Force Tech Sergeant John Burroughs now since at least the 2011 period. And it all goes back to the fact that John Burroughs had served in the United States Air Force from, and he went in 79, and he was stationed at RAF Bentwaters Woodbridge, that was then the largest NATO base in Europe. It was UK and US managed. And there he was an airman first class, which is he'd only been there for basically a short period of time, when on the night of December 26th, it would be the early morning, actually, it was after midnight, he sees, along with others, red, orange, blue, white lights moving rapidly in Rendlesham Forest, which grew along the Woodbridge Bentwaters Air Base. And there were communications with Central Security Control about these lights. They confirmed that there were radar that they had on unidentified that were moving in the airspace, and a decision was made that John Burroughs, another new airman named Ed Kvansak, would go with a more senior officer, who was Staff Sergeant Jim Peniston, out into the Rendlesham Forest to try to identify what were these colored lights.
Right, and just to clarify here, this is a pretty well-known case in terms of ufology. I mean, this isn't like a fringe kind of case. This is something that most ufologists are familiar with, the Rendlesham Forest situation, correct?
Probably the most important case in the last 35
right.
years.
Okay.
I'm setting up this because a lot of people, believe it or not, still do not understand what happened at RAF Bentwaters. And what I'm leading to is that the big deal was to go off into Rendlesham Forest, was to go off into UK civilian land off of the military base.
Oh.
So there had to be an official approval for these three men to go off into the civilian UK American military.
Okay.
So it was John Burroughs over 72 hours back then, on December 26th and again on December 28th, that by the description of outside witnesses was quote-unquote close to orange and red lights twice. There was a rumor on the base after December 26th that John Burroughs quote-unquote jumped up on a flying saucer.
What?
Or was taken me out. Yeah, this was a rumor. Or was taken up in a beam of light. Those were the rumors on the base to people who were there December 26, 1980. Mm-hmm. So now you jump to 2015. And for the last, since 2011, when he started having really serious heart problems that seemed to be linked to his exposure to some kind of what the UK and the in their first very classified documents, and one called Project Condyne that was very secretly released in 2006. Nobody knew until quite recently. And it was linking in 460 pages, a very in-depth scientific report for the UK on unidentified aerial phenomena and the emissions of a non-ionizing radiation that can injure human tissue and manipulate human minds.
Wow.
That is the subject matter in this 460-page Project Condyne. Right now, I believe earthfiles.com is the only website on the planet that has been taking pages from Project Condyne and inserting them into my reporting about John Burroughs because it is so important. And now, having set the stage, what happened is that about 2010 to 11, John Burroughs began not feeling well, and by February of 2011, he was having atrial fibrillation of his heart. He was hospitalized. The doctors were completely baffled because they could not find typical heart disease, and yet he was beginning to deteriorate at such a rapid rate that he literally, his life was threatened. And he went to the Veterans Administration and put in requests for his medical records from the 79 to 82 time period that he had been at RAF Bentwaters, because by then he and others were had information that was leaking out of this Project Condyne that there was radiation that he could have been exposed to that could explain why back in 35 years ago that he had gone into the Air Force healthy as an 18-year-old. This event happened in the forest when he was 20 years old. After the encounter with all of the unidentified phenomena, within a short period of time in what would have been then February to March of 1981, he started feeling badly. Doctors confirmed that he had a heart murmur, and he was shocked, and the doctors were shocked because he would never have been allowed to go into the U.S. Air Force in the first place if he had a heart murmur.
Mm-hmm.
So he then... as the years have gone on, he and everything that's unfolded around what in the world happened in that forest, why was there a huge slam down door by the UK and the US authorities that no one was to know anything about what happened? And you jump to his having atrial fibrillation in the February period of 2011 with doctors baffled. You come to the fact that when he filed with the Veterans Administration to get his medical records, which he did not have from 79-82 at Bentwaters, and he had the help of Jackson, Mississippi attorney Pat Fresconia, that they end up learning that the VA first told him that he had never been in the U.S. Air Force.
What?
That was a huge shock because he had all of the papers in his own files that he had been there and knew he had been there.
Right.
That is the beginning of what has been going on between 2011 and January 2015, in which two U.S. senators from Arizona, starting with John Kyle, who retired during this process of FOIAs and efforts by John Burroughs and his attorney, Pat Fresconia, to number one, get it confirmed that he had in fact served and been at the RAF Bentwaters Woodbridge Air Base, 79-82, and that he deserved medical benefits from the VA. And in all of this process, eventually, this went to John McCain's office after John Kyle retired, and the John McCain staff pushing were able to get a word to John Burroughs and his attorney that apparently, yes, he did serve at RAF Bentwaters Woodbridge. That was acknowledged. And secondly, his medical records were, quote, classified, close quote.
What?
And in the process of trying to unravel why this man who needed emergency open heart surgery to survive would be denied medical records, would not be acknowledged having been there, was not getting full benefits, this is the big breakthrough in January of 2015 after all this struggle, finally, out of the blue. The VA is under the Department of Defense.
Okay.
So the Veterans Administration sent a letter to John Burroughs and his attorney confirming that John Burroughs would now receive full medical benefits for injury in the line of duty, and the implication, as Pat Fresconia, the attorney, put out in a February 22nd press release that was entitled U.S. Government's De Facto Acknowledgement of the Existence of UFOs, because John Burroughs was the only person at that base who, by outside witnesses, twice was either engulfed in, had some interaction with lights, and that this Project Condyne that the UK Ministry of Defense had not released until 2006 quietly says right in it, this is a quote, the well-reported Rendlesham Forest Bentwaters event is an example where it might be postulated that several observers were probably exposed to unidentified aerial phenomena radiation for longer than normal UAP sighting periods. The implication is not only do they know about a link between a non-ionizing frequency of radiation that comes off of UAP, which are UFOs in the United States, mm-hmm. but that they have so much data about the interaction of unidentified aerial phenomena with human beings that they can say in this sentence, for radiation exposure for longer than normal periods, they already knew that the distance from a UAP slash UFO and the length of time of exposure would have impact on human tissues and could manipulate the brain. And one of the problems that John Burroughs has had, in addition to the heart murmur being identified by doctors after the encounters in the Rendlesham Forest at the end of December 1980, they identified that he had a heart murmur that he didn't have before. He had some kind of problems with his eyes that was affecting his eye tissues that he had not had before.
Mm-hmm.
He had back problems that he had not had before. But the big thing that has haunted John Burroughs since December of 1980 is that in that forest, his colleague, Staff Sergeant Jim Peniston, was able to describe a blast of light, a black, glassy, triangular craft that had raised symbols on it,
wow.
dragging his fingers around it, getting a binary code download and telepathy,
wow.
and never knowing where John Burroughs was, and that the Central Security Control knew objectively that they were not able to bring on the radio for at least 45 minutes any one of those three men in Rendlesham Forest. They went off of communication. Those men in the forest do not know what happened. All three of them have different memories. John Burroughs cannot recall the details. His mind is blocked.
Wow.
All of these variations relate to the UK Project Condyne, which goes into great detail about how they have evidence that depending upon length of time of exposure and how close, that this can affect human minds, manipulate perceptions, so that all people at one event will not have the same memory. Some will not have any memory.
Mm-hmm.
This is a definition of over 30 people over a 72-hour period at the RAF Bentwaters Woodbridge event. And we're talking 35 years later.
Right.
There was a whole bunch of people that were involved with repeated beams, lights, and all kinds of events in that Rendlesham Forest between December 26th and December 28th. And John Burroughs right now is the one man who people knew had an encounter twice, who finally, without any other explanation, has received full medical benefits. But to this hour, this minute, he has never, ever been able to get his classified medical records from 79, 82 at RAF Bentwaters Woodbridge.
Wow.
They are still classified, and it is my understanding and John's understanding from a military person in authority who was there, who told us 4 years ago, even though this has not been confirmed, but told us that the National Security Agency of the United States, within 24 hours of the events in Rendlesham Forest, took over the entire investigation of RAF Bentwaters Woodbridge, and that to this day, the National Security Agency has been the one who has had all of the control over not having anything released, and that would imply that the National Security Agency has John Burroughs' medical records,
mm-hmm.
and as John said to me even just last week, what is in my medical records that needs to be so classified that facing open heart surgery as he did, and could not get medical records that would help his doctors here in the United States, what is in those records that is so sensitive that he could not have them even when he was facing open heart surgery, which, thank heavens, to we'll call them behind the scenes medical people who knew at least what was in his medical records, they were able to help the doctors for a mid-December 2014 open heart surgery in Phoenix, and that when they got inside of his heart at the mitral valve level that they had been able to identify the major problem was, they found that his two what are called leaflets that control the relationship of the volume of the blood and the pumping of the heart, they're very critical. One, what's called the anterior leaflet, was completely shredded. The front leaflet was partially shredded. And the doctors, people who know about this kind of injury to these leaflets in a heart, their first question would be, were you exposed to radiation? Okay. So now John is functioning much better. Thank God he is physically so much better because of this very, very important surgery when his life was totally threatened. January 2015, finally, the Veterans Administration grants him the full medical benefits, but without giving him the medical records from that period of time. And this all leads up through my reporting about this on February 22nd, February 27th, and getting to March 8th. When some of my reporting was echoed in the Florida Herald Tribune saying in a headline, quote, did the VA just admit UFOs are dangerous?
Right.
Right. And then on March 3rd, this is after my February 27th reporting about all of this, the UK Mirror followed up with, quote, British UFO encounter gave me heart failure, says U.S. Airman John Burroughs, after military chiefs agree to pay his medical bills, close quote. So this was blasted in the UK. Now, the next important and stunning development came on the night of March 13th last week. And it was about 10 o'clock. I received an email from John Burroughs, and it was his saying, look at this link. Now, remember, I have been reporting all of this in-depth material, and I click on the link that he has sent me, and it is a link to a public thread of comments at a website called ATS, also known as Above Top Secret.
Right.
And they had a title, U.S. DOD have confirmed the UFO phenomenon is real. This is now directly, there's no other place that has been reporting all of this except Earth Files and these other media that picked it up. And they had in the, as the top of this new post at 7:46 p.m., March 13th, 2015, which would have been East Coast time, they have above this Kit Green. Now, Christopher Kit Green is a person whose name has been in the, we'll call it the history, of UFO investigators who long ago, in what would have been around the 1982 time period, a list surfaced of by two men whose names were William Moore and Jamie Chandray. Jamie Chandray was a TV producer, and William Moore had worked on the Roswell UFO crashes of 47.
Okay.
And those two men working together ended up putting out a list of what they called the aviary. They were a list of bird names given to a variety of people with mixed backgrounds that included some UFO investigators, such as Jacques Vallée, who was also an astronomer, and Christopher Kit Green, MD. He was on the list, and this was the 1982 list. This is only 2 years after RAF Bentwaters.
Okay.
Dr. Christopher Kit Green was on this list, the aviary, as Blue Jay. And it was said then, and he confirms now, it's where I'm headed, that he worked for the Central Intelligence Agency on remote viewing research and later became chief of biomedical sciences at General Motors, where he continued to work for the Central Intelligence Agency. More recently, Dr. Green, in his own signature on his own email, says that he has worked as assistant dean Asia-Pacific in the Wayne State School of Medicine, and as professor of diagnostic radiology and psychiatry in the Detroit Medical Center.
Okay.
This is the person who has put these comments in a reply, in a thread, on the web, to a headline provoked by all of the EarthFiles.com reporting in February up through March.
So Kit Daniels actually appears as a commenter underneath this basically this forum thread that John Burroughs sent you yesterday. That's what I'm picking up on.
Well, this goes back to the night of March 13th.
Okay.
We're talking on March 17th. This March 13th is when John sent me, said, look at this URL link.
Okay.
And I'm giving you background on who the commenter in this thread on this statement, USDOD have confirmed the UFO phenomena is real.
Yes, ma'am.
That's what these thread comments are at the ATS website. And this is what it says. And this is really important for everybody to hear. This is from this doctor who has worked for the Central Intelligence Agency by his own admission for at least 45 years. How can it be true that medical records such as John Burroughs could have been classified? Is this true? Is it sensible? What are the reasons? What caused his injuries and several others who were present over the encounter? He means Rendlesham.
Uh-huh.
With the odd air form, so quaint, capital A-I-R, capital F-O-R-M, that emitted the broadband N-I-E-M-R. Well, what he's referring to is this form of non-ionizing radiation that I've told you that is in this Project Condyne, which you can go to earthfiles.com and you can see very critical pages. And I think because it is so important, I'm going to do a whole Earth Files just on sections of this Project Condyne and let people read many of the pages themselves that are very difficult to find if you try.
Linda, we've got to go to a quick 3-minute break, but when we come back, I want to talk more about this aviary list. I want to talk about some of these comments that are underneath this thread, because to me, this classification of his medical records just doesn't make any sense in my mind. So lots of questions remain. Keep it right here, ladies and gentlemen. 3-minute break. Linda Moulton Howe is our guest, and we'll be back. 3 minutes, guys. Right here.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to allgov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
Don't Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money, has a storage life of 100 years, all for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine Now. Only at MUSA.org.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Like a cancer that's silently spreading.
Aging for Truth with Joe Bannister.
Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We're moving into the final segment with our guest today. Linda Moulton Howe has taken some time out of her schedule to join us, and we are talking about, well, in my opinion, probably the most significant smoking gun style evidence of actual UFO interaction with people on the planet that we've ever had. And I don't know if that's an understatement, but would you agree with that, Linda, that that's what we're talking about?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you for summing it up so well. And before the break, I am now quoting from Christopher Kit Green, MD, PhD, FAAFS, that all relates to his varying degrees having to do with being somebody who is in both psychiatry and biomedical sciences and has worked by his own admission for the Central Intelligence Agency for over 40 years. And he posed the question on this website thread that was discussing, arguing, U.S. DOD have confirmed the UFO phenomenon is real, which is coming out of all of my Earth Files work. And when he said, how can it be true that medical records such as John Burroughs could have been classified? Is this true? Here is his answer. It is true. His record. Now listen to this. His records, about 1,000 pages.
What?
I'm reading right from Dr. Kit Green's statement. It is true. His, John Burroughs' records, about 1,000 pages. And remember, they have been classified since December of 1980 and still have not been released.
Mm-hmm.
What in the world would be in 1,000 pages? And to this day, and it's March 13th, 2015 when he wrote this, still many hundreds were in fact legally classified. Now, this is continuing, Dr. Green. In my 46-year career as a medical officer and physician with the Central Intelligence Agency, including as staff officer, chief of intelligence, life sciences division, and assistant national intelligence officer for science and technology, I had, until a year or so ago, in a handful of truly classified medical records, those of Adolf Hitler, John Kennedy's autopsy, and recently, John Burroughs.
Wow.
Let that for a second.
I mean, that's a heck of a demographic to be a part of. You're talking about
exactly.
Medical records in there with Hitler and with JFK, which are two, you know, ostensibly of the most secretive historical events ever in the history of the planet. So, wow, that's impressive. That's impressive.
Okay.
But here's the question I've got, if I can just interject for just a second. If these medical records are classified, how is it that Dr. Green knows the totality of, you know, the records? How does he know that there's 1,000 pages?
Because he worked for the CIA,
right.
And all of this came to focus when John nearly died.
Oh,
and
okay.
Somebody intervened behind the scenes
to
let the doctors at the VA know that this man had been exposed to a certain kind of non-ionizing radiation in 1980 that could have damaged parts of his heart, and that they had enough information based on all of their research that has never been made public that it could affect the mitral valve and that the leaflets could be affected, and the doctors had not been looking at that. And when they got this extra information, that's when they were able to go into John's heart and find the shredded leaflets and repair. In mid-December 2014, this was only a year or so ago that this occurred, and he was facing mortality and knew it, and the doctors knew it. And once they had this information about this exposure to this specific type of non-ionizing radiation from unidentified aerial phenomena, that is the entire subject of Project Condyne, then that he was able to have successful surgery. So you are talking, you're hearing here, that's why this is so astonishing and so important, and it is part of the smoking gun.
Right.
That this man who says that he has worked for the Central Intelligence Agency for 46 years, as a medical officer and physician, that he, at some point in the process of the last 4 years, having to do with John Burroughs getting sick and trying to get his medical records, he, Dr. Kit Green, saw those classified medical records. And now, here's what he says further. He, in the beginning, Dr. Green was denied access because they were classified.
Right, okay.
When I was denied these records after many requests, continuously held top secret and sensitive compartmentalized information clearances for almost 50 years, I was able to quickly determine that the reasons were quite simple. Medical records are not usually digital and are easily sequestered in multiple locations and almost impossible to find. These, John Burroughs, were and remain, except for recent years, in hard copy, meaning John Burroughs' 1,000 pages are in hard copy in a variety of files all over the place, probably in the National Security Agency.
Right.
This is my parenthetical statement, not in this official comment. Now, here he goes on. The reasons are, and this is him, Kit Green, I was told by current Department of Defense and Veterans Administration record staffs that, quote, inside the doctor's notes, nursing notes, the specialist notes, of John Burroughs' records, are a myriad of references to special access projects known to those of us who have been trying to understand the truth about UFOs and technology and entities for a long time. Special access projects are also known as SAPs.
Okay.
And in these SAPs are the names of other, he makes all cap, other, quote, adjacent and ancillary programs and projects that cannot be disentangled and which could uncover active and recent projects unrelated to Rendlesham. Talking about a whole hell of a lot of classified special access projects that are all entangled with the medical notes on John Burroughs from December 1980.
Because they're all in hard copy and all the notes were handwritten in there, so all the corollaries between different cases obviously would be evident in that. Wow, that's significant.
Right, and that the reasons then for all of the classification is that all of this is entangled in 35 years and that not all of these special access projects are related directly to Rendlesham, but you and I and listeners, I'm sure, get this by now. It's all related to what the UK calls unidentified aerial phenomena that we have called for since 47, unidentified flying objects, and that there are a lot of other acronyms and names in government documents.
Right.
Now, he goes on, this is Dr. Kit Green, in the context of his CIA work and his studying John Burroughs' case. The classification of John Burroughs' records makes sense operationally, but no sense ethically. John was hurt. He needed care then, often, and now. He had injuries we now understand are related to narrow radio frequency bandwidths that only in some cases in the past 5 years have become linked to the specific etiology of cardiac, that's the heart, and other injuries he suffered, that Burroughs suffered, which is his eyes and other tissues, are likely other persons and other injuries. Okay, then he goes on, yes, his records were classified, some remain classified. The reasons are not entirely ethical. Thank God that a couple of senators had the guts to push, and he means Kyle and Senator John McCain, and push to disentangle that which was legitimately classified from those medical records that were needed to make the right decision about injury sustained while on active duty, period. It was true. It is sensible. It is not entirely the stuff to make us physicians very proud. He goes on about what this radiation is called. Broadband, non-ionizing, electromagnetic radiation caused the injuries. That's what Project Condyne is all about.
Okay.
The radio frequency is identified in a dozen classified and a half dozen, that's six, unclassified studies on cardiology and neurological injuries. He says there are not thousands of reports. He says there are only six.
Wow.
And as far as John Burroughs and I and his attorney know, the 460-page Project Condyne quietly unclassified in 2006 and not made known to any of us until about 2.5 years ago is the one that has most of the data. Now, he says, very few physicians even care about this arcane area of research, and fewer know about the injuries sustained by near field within 100 meters to humans.
Right.
Well, John Burroughs, according to witnesses, was engulfed by whatever this phenomena was.
Right.
The data, this is continuing now as Dr. Kit Green's thread comments. The data is sparse. It is not properly peer reviewed. It is not understood. It is not the subject of current research. And that is the truth. The decision that was made to grant medical disability to John was just. Some of his records being classified, those of us in military and intelligence medicine can be proud the right decision was finally, if belatedly, made. That means get behind the scenes so that he could have the open heart surgery and be up. We should remain both vigilant and ashamed. The question remains improperly darkened, and we should bring it to the light when we can. And then here is his last statement that is, he titles disclosure statements. One, I did not clear this short statement with John Burroughs, his attorney, or anyone in my government, including my contracting officers, technical representatives, and
wow.
He means the CIA.
Right, wow.
Two, I am a chief medical advisor to ATS, the website above Top Secret, which interestingly enough, since it came online and to this day, has been considered by many, many researchers to be an official counterintelligence disinformation website.
Well, and there you go. Right. I mean, that I got to stop you there because that really made the hair on my neck stand up. The fact, you know, I was kind of coming around to that point that I thought it was really interesting that an active CIA operative would come on to a above Top Secret and actually lay information out, you know, well known. But then to have you come out and say that he's actually somebody who is in, you know, in connection to the site often, that's concerning, you know, especially for people out there who might think that that's an alternative news source, you know.
It's not. It's always been considered a debunking site by
wow.
those of us who actually have been exposed to real facts. And this goes right to the heart of the third disclosure statement by Dr. Christopher Kit Green. Quote, I own a fraction of a percent of stock in the Above Network LLC, which is Above Top Secret,
right.
which is owned and operated by this LLC. And then he says, finally, I receive no compensation, signed Christopher C. Green, MD, PhD, FAAFS. Well, after seeing this, and John and I and his attorney are actually very grateful that Dr. Kit Green has made this extraordinarily honest statement about
mm-hmm.
why John Burroughs' medical records would have been classified for all this time since December 1980, that the classification and not the VA to get those records jeopardized John's life,
mm-hmm.
but that somebody behind the scenes came forward with information about this broadband non-ionizing electromagnetic radiation to doctors who then could use that information and go into the heart, to the mitral valve, and repair the shredded leaflets. This raises gigantic questions about what does our government know in 2015
mm-hmm.
about the phenomena that intruded in Rendlesham Forest 35 years ago, and what do they know now about the dangers to humans and Earth life within 100 meters of exposure to this broadband non-ionizing electromagnetic radiation that is emitted from unidentified aerial. And what is the relationship right now in this planet between the United States government, the United Kingdom government, and the non-human phenomena that is responsible for the unidentified aerial phenomena, not only in Rendlesham Forest, but around this planet, not only for the 21st century and the 20th century, but it's my understanding that we have had this phenomena has been interacting with this planet for millions of years. And the very fact that there may be no threat in the broad timeline of history, there may be no threat from the intent of whatever the prime intelligence is behind all of this, but the way our government and the way the UK government has been reacting since World War II is as if the phenomena is a threat, and that any back engineering technology that they have retrieved from crashes is applied to the development of defense weapons,
mm-hmm.
which flies in the face of the UK's own persistent, we'll call it dismissal for at least three decades, that there was no defense significance in the UK RAF Bentwaters Woodbridge Rendlesham phenomenon. There was nothing of defense significance was repeated over and over. And yet, when you jump to the release of Project Condyne quietly, who knows why, in 2006, about all of this physical data, and that John Burroughs and others have received information that, of course, any radiation that can affect human minds and can damage human tissue is ideal for a defense weapon, and that what they have learned and have been learning since World War II, they have been trying to apply to weapons, and that those defense weapons are classified to the nth degree, mm-hmm. and that once, and that goes right to the heart of Dr. Kit Green talking about those special access projects.
Right, right.
The SAP projects relate to the back engineering mm-hmm. of extraterrestrial technology, its radiations, everything that it does to apply to defense weaponization.
Wow.
This is how big this is.
Oh, this is huge. I mean, this is the biggest development in ufology in a long time. But, you know, my mind is reeling with questions. First of all, you know, getting into the Dr. Green and this disclosure about the special access projects and things like that, you know, I guess I want to know what your opinion is of what the actual event was that took place in the forest. Do you feel like it was a DARPA-type side project that went awry, and then the government realized, hey, we are really responsible because we developed this thing and it hurt this guy and now we have to take responsibility? Or are you of the opinion that it was, my thought is, given the amount of radiation coming off of this supposed craft, it would have been very difficult for a person to have been inside piloting it as a side project or whatever. So my mind goes to, you know, this could have been a real event, and there's a lot of conjecture out there that event correlated with an intelligent being kind of shutting down our military systems, you know, the nuclear weapons and things like that, which to me would be a natural response from an intelligence that sees their down crashes and their, you know, down technology being turned around and trying to use in a defensive manner. It seems like they would go out of their way to try and make sure we weren't going to destroy ourselves or become some sort of exponential threat to the universe. What are your thoughts on what actually happened there in that forest?
Much closer to your end comments, that it seems to me that when you go to Staff Sergeant Jim Peniston back in December 1980, the more senior member of the three men who went into the forest.
Mm-hmm.
And what he has said about losing track of John, Ed Kvancak, the airman, had been left at a truck. So the only two men who went into the forest chasing the lights were Jim Peniston and John Burroughs.
Okay.
And the fact that Jim Peniston has described and remembers his mind was affected differently than John Burroughs. He says there was a huge blast of white light, overwhelmed everything in the forest. And then he, Jim Peniston, is describing and sketching in a notebook that he always had with him because he was one of the people that they asked to go out to airplane crashes and do investigations, and he always carried a notebook to write down details and sketch crash sites. So now he was like a knee-jerk reaction. He
right.
pulls out his notebook, and he starts sketching this thing and estimating the size of it, not huge, somewhere in the 7 to 9 foot long, and that it had light on the bottom. He couldn't see whether it was supported on anything. By the morning when the sun came up, there were photographs that were taken by police. I have one of the photos, and there was definitely a triangular pattern that was embedded into the forest at a specific site. So that means that whatever this thing was, it had a lot of weight, and it pressed down on strange pads into the forest floor. But Jim Peniston did not see that. He only saw light around this black, glassy, 7 to 9 foot long object. So no, this was not manned. This was a what we call today a drone. And when he dragged his hand around on this glassy surface to the front vertex of the triangle, there were symbols, and the symbols were raised above the surface of the glass.
Mm-hmm.
He compared it to Braille, where a person who is blind drags their fingers over the raised code on a page, and they can read. And that when he dragged his fingers over these raised symbols at the front of this triangle, he got a download of zeros and ones into his head, and he got the telepathic thought that this was a time travel machine,
wow,
not manned. And this is the part that is so mind-blowing in a way, if it were correct, that it was from 50,000 years in the future. Is it humanity? Is it something else? It's not clear. But that, the reason why this glassy drone from the future, a time travel machine, if Peniston got any of the download telepathically correct, that was here to harvest genetic material in order to get back to 50,000 years in the future to use as, quote, band-aids, close quote, on a civilization that was facing extinction. Now, that extinction relates to many people in the human abduction syndrome over the last 40, 50 years who have had impressions that we are dealing with extraterrestrial biological entities, which could be something 50,000 years in the future. You could have simultaneously an extraterrestrial biological entity could also be a time traveler from the future. They are not exclusive.
Right.
There has been an impression in many people in the human abduction syndrome that we are dealing with some kind of intelligence that has a survival problem, and that the survival problem may actually relate to the inability for its DNA to keep replicating. That would be instant extinction if our DNA stopped replicating. Okay, so now maybe all of this is a survival problem at many levels, past, present, and future, involving something in the future that has the ability to time travel. There's nothing in quantum physics that says you cannot go back in time.
Mm-hmm.
That has been established. And that we humans are at a very strange crossroads of our own making on this planet that you highlighted just a few minutes ago. We are on perhaps the brink of destroying ourselves or getting past this very dangerous geopolitical time on the planet, well, we will go into the future, and if we pass this particular juncture, then maybe we will continue to evolve without nuclear weapons.
Oh, wouldn't that be something?
And that the non-humans or the time travelers or whatever category you want to put the unidentified aerial phenomena in, they know the dangers of nuclear war. They know all of it.
Yep.
And that what they have done, and Bob Salas, if he were on this discussion with us, would say he knows firsthand that UFOs shut down our missiles at Malmstrom.
Yes.
As if warning, you can't do this.
That's right. Linda, I'm sorry. I've got to let you go. We are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. This has been ultimately fascinating.
Thank you. God bless you guys.
Thank you. Everybody check out Earthfile.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you
are. Make it TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.